listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. On my right here, I've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello.
Wait. We've got Bobby Summerfield. Bobby is in the house.
Yo, what's up? Hello, geezers. How are you?
Good to see you, mate. Yeah.
And next to Bobby, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello.
And we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello there, Mike.
And I am pleased to introduce the newest member of our panel, Andrew Sheps.
Hello.
But really quick, for the people that haven't listened to the podcast that we did when you were the guest, why don't you just give us a brief little synopsis on who you are and what you've done? And
Okay. Well, I'm an engineer, producer in the LA area, mostly rock bands, that kind of thing. I was here because I just mixed half of the Red Hot Chili Peppers record, and that's what we talked about for quite a while. And that's what I do.
And that's a good thing. It's a great job, and it's just a great album, so pick it up if you want to hear a really good record that was made all analog, 2-inch tape?
Yeah, like 98% 2-inch tape, and
can I come and sit next to you?
Yeah.
I'm feeling kind of lonely next to this Pro Tools rig here.
Hey, speaking of Pro Tools, 7.2 came out, and from what I understand, Scott, there was an event that you went to.
Yeah, you know, for all us, there's about 150 people. And we all met, and DigiShot kind of showed us some of the highlights on Pro Tools 7.2.
But it was a sneak preview. It's not actually out yet.
No. I mean, they're hoping to come out, what they're saying is sometime in August, you know, early, mid, late, you know, so pretty much we should get it by November. It seemed to be focused around a couple areas, heavy on the mixing side. It's the first time that I saw Pro Tools starting to really feel like a mixing console with VCA type automation. And one thing I did like about some of the automations is that you can do fill to end, fill to areas. You can do kind of preview mixing, where if you want to play with it, you can set it up, listen to it, hear your whole automation of everything else, rather than doing a suspend automation, and now nothing's working, so you no longer hear your mix. Now you can hear everything else mixing, and then highlight those faders that you want to kind of preview automate. And then if you like it, you could then write it, and you can write back to where you started from where the now marker went on to either to the end or to wherever you want to go with it. What I liked on it is it also showed you a comparison of, I love it, all these guys that are beta testing going, I can't see anything. They're like, they're nodding like, okay.
We can't say anything. We can just confirm.
Once
you've like, said it.
You know. But what is nice is because usually you had the little black line that went on. Now you got blue lines and yellow lines and showing you different types of automation. And then you can either commit to it. You don't have to commit to it. It just seems much more
professional.
Professional, yeah. It just seems like much more like a mixing console.
Do you have different automation envelopes on the screen at one time then? Different colors, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes, because what's happened is you can compare to what you did before. Right. Also, what happens is as you write, it writes your automation in real time rather than you do a bunch of automation and then it updates it.
Oh, I see.
So you can see what you've done, where you're going. Also, you know, you can, the groupers are amazing. And also similar to like the Euphonics, which is something that I've been asking a lot for the last 2 years, is something called Spill, where what you can do is you can take your VCA masters, and let's say you have a string section, you hit strings. It'll then spill out all the extra tracks to the concurrent faders that will say, okay, here's the violins, the violas, the cellos, the, you know, contrabass. And then if you don't, it'll automatically wrap it up. So this way you can do your mixes just on your masters. And then you can open, expand it. And when you're working on an icon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. So like for post-production, you know, if I've got, you know, 60 tracks of guns, I just want gun. Five, you know. And they have metering for it.
That's cool.
You know, the sends. It just.
New window.
I feel like, you know, look at it yesterday. And now you'll be tested on it. But no, it seems like that. Oh, also, they were trying to get so many oohs and ahs so that show feature. Ooh, you know, 100 people, you know. Also video, having multiple tracks of video. You can have multiple video tracks. You can have multiple clips per track.
Well, that's good.
You can conform. You can cut picture, which is huge. And also grouping, so you can have different parts where you hold up a different piece of picture, and it shows you the coordinating audio.
You can cut picture? Boy, is that ever going to be misused.
Well, simple cutting.
Wow. Well, you know, but I was worried that all of a sudden they go, oh, we just sent you a cut. Oh, I'm only 2 or 3 frames off. So then you go in, and next thing, you could hurt yourself.
Yeah,
bad.
I know.
Oh, goodness. They also have stuff for post-production, which is great, where it reads in metadata. So if you're on location and they have, like, who the characters are, what they did, what microphone they used. A lot of times I'm recording with multiple mics, and I can actually put down what mics they are. It will then have all that information if you use broadcast wave files. SD2, it loses it.
Well, that's good.
Broadcast is white, too.
Yeah.
How many different video tracks can you go?
You can only play one at a time, but you can have a lot.
Yeah, and you can have either QuickTime or Avid.
Or actually, almost anything, and on the same track.
See, I like that because mixing a lot of commercials, you know, I have versions, you know, go up to version 10. So if they go, well, let me see version 8, you know, and now.
Yeah, you could put them all in the same session, just keep copying your audio, pasting it to the new video, and just have them all concurrent. Or you can playlist them too, right, on the video track. So you could just playlist it.
That's awesome.
Also, they do a lot, they've introduced write key functions on the mouse. That does a lot of stuff.
Like, how many times have you gone into spot mode for one region and then you have to go back out? And you always forget. Every time, you right-click any region spot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I mean, it was pretty deep. And, you know, and this is just the highlight features they were talking about. Any major thing?
Just the groups. I mean, you touched on what you can do with them. But basically, any group, you can choose what you're grouping. It used to be just either a mix group or an edit group. But within the mix group, you can choose to just link plugin C, just insert C. Yeah. So if you've got 10 tracks that all have an EQ3 on plugin C, you can group those EQs so that you move any control on any one of the 10 tracks and the other 9 change, but the rest of the plugins don't follow the group or do follow the group. You can have send pans follow the main pan, which
that was huge. Where if you have stereo panning, or even 5.1 panning, when you make the pan on the volume on the position, all of the sends will follow.
And within the group, you can offset link your pans or hard link your pans. So if you've got multiple mono tracks, let's say, you can have them all pan together if you want, or all offset pan together. So if you shove one to the left, they all move a bit to the left.
Right. The other nice thing is once you've set up these groups, because groups can be a lot more complex than they were before, you can go in and modify the groups.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, if you want to change which tracks are in a group, it's easy to change.
You just right click the group and up it comes.
Can you save groups as like a setup?
You can save presets. Yes. There's six presets.
Yeah, and on the icon, you can do more with snapshots.
Yeah, the icon has a lot of cool stuff. You can do full on automation snapshots where you can basically copy the current value of every control on everything in a session and paste it to the next chorus or whatever.
And then what they were just showing on the icon, which is unique to the icon, is you hit a button on the scroll and it can take all your faders and shift them just really fast. So whatever's on fader one can go over here just by going bloop, and it just moves it right down.
I'm not quite sure. I don't understand what you mean.
Well, because if you've got a lot of different... Before, you know, you had the, like on the control 24, you had the nudge or the bang.
Exactly.
This is, you just hit a button and you use your little...
Oh, you mean the physical...
Which faders you want to use.
Okay, got you.
But I still think that the nested spill-out group concept is huge.
Well, the VCAs are ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. Because all of the... I mean, basically, it turns... It gives you a fader that's like what a master fader did for an output, but it does it for a group. So if you group your drums, you make a VCA for the drum group. It then unlocks the volume linking that used to be in that drum group, where when you touch the hi-hat, which, you know, bring it up 3 dB, everything else jumps.
Exactly.
You can unlock those volumes. So you can still go in and change your drum balance, but you've got a single fader that's controlling the drums, no matter what outputs it's going to.
That's huge. That's big.
And you have – it's almost a matrix of what you want – to cover, whether it's the sends, the volumes, the pans, and you have 6 different presets on just that.
And then you can nest VCAs, and also then for every fader, like you'd hinted at with the different automation, one of the things you can do is you've got your standard automation, your volume automation that you always see,
right?
And then there's a separate trim volume playlist which you can see. So if you go into trim automation now, you write your trim. When you hit stop, it just shifts the automation up. And you can leave Pro Tools to do it that way, where after you hit stop, it just writes the trim. Okay. Or you can tell it don't ever put, they call it coalescing, but don't ever coalesce the trim into the main automation. So you can go through, and let's say you're printing versions of a mix, you need to do a vocal up. Just crank the trim playlist up a half dB, all the normal volume plays underneath, then get rid of it.
Right.
Bring it down a half.
Like name here, end mix in the old days.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's very, very cool.
Wow, it sounds like they really have listened to a lot of mixers and really have made it even more functional as a mixing platform.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's amazing you say this, and I'm not going to put a spanner in the works, but Nuendo, all these features you had, a lot of the features you're talking about have had a long, long time.
You know,
and the mixing features, right? Amazing. You're saying,
so much of it is about how it's been marketed. I mean, that's
it's such
not
a shame
a secret,
because Nuendo has had all this stuff, and I mean, you know, I've mixed on all the automation systems of big consoles, and it smokes.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's just, I mean, I'm pleased for Pro Tools people, but I'm just saying.
It becomes down to standards and what, unfortunately, what's happened with Pro Tools, or fortunately, you know, it depends how you look at it, is that people are used to using.
Oh, it's
and
stable
it's
too. It's a good
so much platform. Market penetration that I think with Nuendo changing several owners.
I agree.
It's
hundreds.
Really taken out a lot of the momentum.
And also,
nobody's really sure what it wants to be.
They've made a buggy bunch of shit in the past, too. So they've had a bad name as well. So
they
have to undo that, too.
Because I know even in the union, in the sound union or the editors union, they had Nuendo classes for a while. Because they figured, okay, there's a really big platform. We're going to start teaching all the union members to get into Nuendo. And then we said, okay, here's the race. That was when I think Pinnacle owned them. Mm-hmm. And then every time we got demos on post, they weren't talking about post. And then it just seemed to fizzle out.
But then terribly managed. The whole has been really badly managed. It's been great software, but it's been terribly managed, that whole company.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully Yamaha will kick some butt now. Pinnacle was the worst company for them. I mean.
Yeah.
Hey, if nothing else, it's forcing Digi to keep making Pro Tools.
Well, absolutely.
A lot stronger.
What about the MIDI?
But you know, I also think, though, that everybody's looking for the draped monolith. That hasn't come out yet, and that's Apple. Because what Final Cut did to Avid, and now that they own Logic, you know, you go, okay, Apple owns Logic. We saw what they did with Final Cut. Okay, now here's Digi. What are they going to do? You know, and Soundtrack Pro. Okay, that's a little, you know, it was kind of brilliant in the fact that it's this little dialogue app. That's got all these great little noise reduction things. It's very focused. It doesn't do a whole lot. But if they want, they could.
But you know what, Apple, you know, what they've done with Logic is not even comparable to what they did with Final Cut. I mean, they really haven't done.
No, they haven't done anything. Right. The question is, that's why I say it's the draped monolith and the fact that if they want to do it, they can. We know they're involved in things. We just don't know what.
Well, we don't know if they want to do it because people have been speculating about it for so long.
But I also think that Digi is starting to like hit the trees, not in a bad way, but to kind of get off the ground floor. Because let's say they do come out with an editor, I'm not sure they're going to follow them into the mixing world, like coming out with a mixing hardware interface and to get to the levels that I think Digi's starting to enter. I mean, it's an editor, but they're really getting into mixing in a significant way.
But I think also. I mean, from what I can tell, Apple certainly is going to keep Logic going, but they're interested in 60 million sales, not 6 million.
Definitely.
And no one wants to hit the Pro Tools market because you can't – there's take over. But you know what? From talking to – I mean, I'm maybe in some portions of the industry, Final Cut has supplanted Avid, but I know a lot of video editors who hate Final Cut.
No, I don't think
and they get onto it and they say, well, you know, I can get it done, but if I could just have an Avid, if there were
absolutely
a budget for an Avid, I'd still want it.
Yeah, but there's, you know what, there's a lot of young guys coming out of school now that don't even know an Avid.
Well,
and so,
if they don't know
and
it.
They're cutting on Final Cut. I'm working with a company that has, you know, like 30 Final Cut editors in there. And
but I think what'll change with that is I think, and I could be, you know, I'm making this up. This is not like, ooh, inside information. I would think that Avid would make the equivalent of Pro Tools LE because people come out of the schools knowing Pro Tools because of LE, not because the schools are given TDM systems.
No, you're right.
It's because they've got 40 M boxes in a lab.
That's right.
And I think Avid's going to have to do the same thing, and they probably will.
Well, I think if Apple Apple's going to compete with Pro Tools or do anything like it, it's going to be a revamped version of Soundtrack Pro, because if it's just an audio editing application, it's not going to have nearly as big of a market as the people that want to do the complete thing, you know, do the whole mix, do the whole edit, do everything in a pro audio application.
You know, it's really complicated and really expensive and really difficult and really uncertain to try to compete with Digi. Yeah. It's Apple is making so much more money off just selling iPods than they ever could.
But you know what?
One
thing I think the Final Cut did do though, and then I think Avid's response was Avid Express. Because what happened, I think, was in post, I'm starting to see picture cutters and directors have their own picture cutting systems at home that don't really cost anything. So they could sit there and play with it and tinker with it and start doing things where before a full-blown Avid wasn't cost-effective, nobody was going to shell out the bucks. You know, I think that, Digi is definitely a mainstay. I mean, for music, they've taken out pretty much everybody. I mean, there used to be Atari and Studer and a ton of console companies. Mm-hmm. And you think about one company, you know, they are the Microsoft of audio. You know, they have so dominated.
Well, it would be like supplanting tape at this point. Yeah. They're that pervasive in music.
But someone will surpass them eventually.
Well, if they don't keep their eye on the prize. I mean, you can go back to Synclavier, and that's exactly what happened to Synclavier, is they were the monolithic company who had the best of everything and didn't realize that Pro Tools and the emulator were doing what they were doing on a desktop. They were the garage band. Pro Tools, whatever version it was when they came out with the TDM mixer, was like the way we're talking about Final Cut versus Avid. I mean, it was that much below in terms of price and the platform it ran on. And New England Digital just failed to see it. They just said, no, people spend $500,000.
Give us another $5,000.
But you know what's great, though, I think, with all of this? It's actually good for us, and it's actually good for Digi. Because instead of them having a situation where there is no competition, and they can just kind of, we'll get around when we get around, all of a sudden they're like, you know what? We have to make sure that we're doing things. I mean, they're competing against the sequencer companies. They're competing against, Apple and all the other workstations that are still around. It keeps them healthy, it keeps them smart, and it brings an amazing amount of products to us and updates.
Did you see any new sequencer features, or did you MIDI sequencing features of it, or did they not even go? It was just a post.
There's not a lot in this.
No, that was mostly in 7.1, I believe, wasn't it?
Okay, but they nothing. Had some stuff, not on this one.
Okay, it's nothing new on this one. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what. The one company I think that would pose a threat to the DigiDesign kingdom would be a company like Ableton. We grew up in a certain paradigm of mixing, but there's a whole nother generation of the DJ generation, the loop-based generation, loop-based composing, that you look at a product like Ableton Live, and that it's, I think music is gonna change. The way we make music is going to change, and it's actually going to open up a bigger market than people realize.
I don't know that much, though. I disagree with that, because I think Ableton Live's more of a creator.
Well, I'm not talking about that company specifically, but, look at the magazines, look at Electronic Musician, look at...
I love Ableton, by the way. I think it's
no, I understand, but, there's just some really cool, hip, new ways of music production that we haven't even thought of,
At some point,
the vocalist has to come in. At some point,
but see, you can do that. The thing is in Ableton, you can do that. You could record straight into it.
Have you guys ever checked out Kid Rock? Obviously, everyone's going to hit his site, but you should do, because he deserves the kudos. He's absolutely a creative dude. He runs Ableton Live. And he does live shows. And his gig is he goes to the show with a laptop, Ableton Live laptop, and it's blank. It's got no sounds in it, no loops, nothing. And he goes, "Hi, how you doing?" And he's got an SM58, and he's got a bunch of guitar pedals. And he goes, "Yeah, how you doing?" And he goes, hits it, and he's got like this foot pedal controlling his MIDI stuff. And you should check it out online. He does like smoking stuff in like 3 seconds. And he like starts singing over the top, and he does a whole live concert with Ableton Live. He's very good. You should check it out. It's a great demonstration for how good Ableton Live is.
I think that is going to be – there's going to be more of those people than there are going to be people that are going to be spending out the money for TDM systems. Granted, Pro Tools will –
But it's a different market. TDM is completely different. You're not going to have MGM and all these dubbing stages having Ableton Live.
Scott, when you were doing your sound design and when you started bringing in your first – samplers into your the stage, and he first started doing that. I mean, it's just technology just has a way of just changing, and you really can't stop it. You know, you're going to see whole records done in a program like Ableton, and it never even touched
Pro Tools. There already are.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
There are tons of them. But I don't. But the thing that's going to, I mean, it, you know, I always come at this just from the music side because
sure.
that's where I live. But
sure.
I don't. There will always be bands that play and then try to figure out how to record themselves,
right.
and they're never going to go towards something like live. Whereas all the DJ kids. are learning live, and that's all they're ever going to need. And they don't need you don't graduate from live to Pro Tools at all.
Right.
If you're making all your music,
matter of fact,
live,
go backwards.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
yeah. the features of
but I
Ableton.
Think there will always be the live thing where you need the tape machine aspect of it.
Exactly, because what I see Digi, I see both of them living in the same world because I see Digi's basically taking over the tape machine and the console. And the fact that you don't need the big console and you don't need the tape machine. And what's great is you can actually now manipulate the tape with the console and have it integrated. But when you start talking about manipulators, I mean, Rob and I, we've all been talking about the second, third, fourth computers that are also in your room where we've got dedicated to just those kinds of programs that eventually feed into
Pro Tools.
Yeah, I mean, I think Live is on Digi's radar. I mean, you know, they know.
Oh, no doubt.
They distribute it with every version of LE.
Yeah. So. You know what? In my world, though, I still think of, like, Live would be an instrument that you play and that you create with, and Pro Tools or Nuendo are the medium
recording.
That it gets recorded to.
I agree.
And they coexist happily. I mean, I would record some live performance stuff into Live if I then wanted to process it like a loop.
Right.
But if I just was doing a symphonic piece or something that nothing repeated ever.
You'd slit your wrists.
Well, or how about a different time signature every bar and a bunch of tempo changes in Live? I'd go insane.
I'd say the only thing I thought that Digi was not.
The world is unkind to us.
I mean, it was nice that they had it, but I think that it was a. Well, they'll come and get me now, but I wasn't as impressed with is that they came out with the dubber concept, which all it means is destructive record. That you can have tracks that you can destructive record. But I was hoping that they would come out with a dedicated system that had certain type of GPIs, that had, you know, 422s on the back that you can have a ton of inputs and just like one, you know, a set of outputs you can build stems into it, a stem recorder. Because a stem recorder still has to go out through six channels in a post-production situation. But still, they're kind of going, yeah, you can take Pro Tools and do destructive record and do all these really cool things, a little PEC Direct thing into Pro Tools. But it's still Pro Tools. Right. It's not a system that is now a dedicated, true, you know, recorder, a dubber.
Do you record when you do your stems? Do you go back into Pro Tools, or do you go to like an MX24?
No, we go to MMRs. I mean, MMRs is still the standard out here. But yeah, it's a pain in the ass because you got to go and you know go from a SCSI hard drive,
right.
put it on the network, take it off the drive, put it on the network, download it, or put it straight into your Pro Tools, which means you now need a SCSI card. You know, and yeah, and it's, you know, I think there's better solutions, but there's a lot of other companies, Tascam's trying to come out with the 48 track, which I'm hearing mixed reviews on, and but there's Gen X.
They're coming out with a 48 track?
Well, they've been publicizing it.
Yeah, you can see the ads in the magazines right
now. Hard drive system.
Yeah, hardware 48 track system.
But I've heard, you know, I don't know, someone told me, you know, yeah, I don't know, I'm not sure if it's working
that well. Oh, don't tell me that, because I'm trying to put together a live recording rig right now for 48 tracks, and I'm trying to be pretty economical on this thing. I was thinking.
I'll tell you something to look out for for Live, and I just learned my lesson the hard way, and I'll tell you a bit about it later on. Using Nuendo Live, I was recording live 16 tracks,
right.
and I was on stage with the band playing, and we had three drummers, and the hard drives took a dump because it just couldn't stand
the
SBL and the vibration. So, I mean, I don't know, just for your live, I mean, maybe this 48 tracker, I'm sure they're testing it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out, because I got a potential gig to do some live recording at the end of the month, but I need to do a
3348, dude. Stick on the side of the.
So they're giving them away, too.
Yeah, really. How many tracks do you need?
I love them, too. I still dig them.
48, 47, 44. And link them together.
Yeah, no.
But you can link them. Just go dink, and everything goes.
If somebody made a decent. No, we're having three conversations.
That's kind of. There's a big edit.
That's great.
A podcast gone wild. Everybody's just talking. I had a dog once. But Scott, thanks for the rundown on
it's exciting. I think it's probably the biggest update that I've seen that Digi's come out with in a long time, and it's exciting to see the next giant leap that they've made, especially on the mixing side.
What seemed cool to me about it overall, though, is it just seems like they're being creative and also really responsive.
It very much so.
Like, that is all, great to hear.
Most of the stuff is stuff you've been thinking, God, why can't it do that? And now they've done it and they've done it right.
They're listening to people.
You know what? I just have to say, the fact that you can see waveform during Quick Punch, that's like, nice. That's great. Yeah. Love it. That one feature alone.
See, the stuff that you thought you should have been able to do 5 years ago, you now really appreciate it.
I know, and now somehow we're told to feel really special about it. You know?
New Window 4 is coming out. Oh, you're going to have a great revision coming soon.
You know, one of the things that New Window doesn't have, though, is the icon. Kind of nice.
Yeah, that's a great
I mean, it used to be people go, yeah, it's a big typewriter. But you know what? No, it's kind of nice. I mean, it's pretty responsive. And now with this update,
how does it interface? What protocol?
It's Ethernet.
Ethernet. Yeah.
Ethernet and a lot of cash.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. but surely somebody could work out if you interface in other applications because it's one large mouse. Is it really?
I mean,
basically. Yeah. Yeah. They don't. I don't think they let people into the Ethernet.
Oh no, they're not going to let anyone.
Third party does all the MIDI stuff. I don't think anyone's done Ethernet.
No one's done that.
Yeah. I mean, once they can, you know, from my world, because right now it's still, you know, one icon per Pro Tools. And so I know people that have three icons for three Pro Tools. You know, like a lot of shows that we were talking about, I'll use 12 HD systems. And I'm not getting 12 icons. Yeah, that's ridiculous. So, you know, and then you can kind of like...
So you can't control multiple Pro Tools?
No.
Well, I mean, you can lock the transports of multiple systems, but the icons, one of them's got to be a master,
dedicated,
and that's what the icon's on. But you could drag as many systems
but
as you want.
But can you A-B, let's say, now I'm going to control HD1, now I'm going to control HD2?
No, it's one icon hooked to one.
Like
a big
KVM.
I mean, you know, with... You could rescan and reassign it to different rigs, but you know you have to deselect it from the first rig, and because you could network them all and they can just be sitting there, but it could only be on one.
But I think the future, you know, which we were talking about, and obviously they just kind of nod quietly and go, you know, like they can't respond to anything. But I was going to say it'd be great to have it all basically networked, so then you could sit there and go, okay, I want these tracks and this fader, these tracks and this fader, and what they're doing is they're just taking different tracks and faders from different machines, putting it on the board, creating custom setups.
Oh, from multiple Pro Tools rigs on one icon?
Because all you're doing is just playing. Yeah.
Well, I think...
I would not want to have to write that network protocol.
I think as soon as Pro Tools does sub-sessions within a session, then it'll truly have hit the holy grail of the be-all and
I will say this. The other day I was doing a bunch of work in Nuendo, and I had a bunch of audio tracks and a bunch of MIDI tracks, and I had three different versions of a project, and I had to just pick up and drag and drop audio regions and MIDI regions between different sessions. And in Nuendo, I was able to just easily open up three sessions, see them all in different windows, and
it's
just drag the
system.
Stuff.
No, it's cutting edge.
You know what? We had a major love moment. That was amazing.
Because I asked Pro Tools, can you open up multiple sessions?
In Cubase did that seven years ago.
I started on AudioVision, and the sub-sequences were awesome because you could build a whole session.
Yeah,
exactly. And then you just, boom, sub-session into it. And it was wonderful.
It's a shame. I mean, going back to Nuendo, it's a shame that, like, DigiDesign didn't buy them. It's okay, guys, you know, this is really great. You guys are good. You need somebody to do, you need 20 more people working on the project. Because it would it's a much better system. It's just, it needs to be fixed. But it's
for some applications, it is. Yeah. I mean, I really go back and forth between the two. For somebody who wants something like the icon,
right.
You know.
No, exactly. No,
Digi's
exactly.
amazing.
Well, you know, on an upcoming podcast, we're going to do a whole podcast dedicated, speaking of the icon, on alternative controllers because, you know, more and more people are actually getting away from the icons. And I see a lot of people that are using Pro Tools and mixing with the mouse. And you know, if you're going to bet the family farm on the icon, I don't know if that's, you know, necessarily.
You know, it's
evolve.
Two different markets, though. Yeah, I don't think you'd have too many people questioning should I mix with a mouse or with $125,000.
I think the question is compared more against, you know, the Neves, the SSLs, the big people that are building studios with Pro Tools, but you know, 48 tracks have now cost you, you know, $200,000, and you know, all of a sudden the prices are really big. So now it's saying if you had a 192 fader console,
what would it cost?
Then becomes very economical.
But the conversation's a little bit different because the decision of whether you're going to mix using a mouse and maybe a little 8-channel fader box or something, or mixing with an icon, does not affect your sound at all, not even the slightest bit, zero. So,
reflection off the speaker then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, reflection and sound off the icon, maybe. No, but you know what I mean? There's no sound difference whatsoever. It's a much more convenient user interface, obviously, the icon is. But I don't think there are too many people deciding, do I spend zero or 150 grand or whatever it would end up being, and as if they're equal.
But you know what? It also depends. If you're a business and someone's going to pay, you know, let's say dubbing stage, $1,000 an hour.
Yeah, then you're going to get
a
big
concert. And you're sitting there mixing with a mouse. It's just
but
not
no,
cool
that's
looking.
Why I say it's two different markets.
If you got three icons in a row, they're going to go, wow, look at all the little lights.
But listen, it's two completely different markets. Yeah. Somebody sitting at home mixing, the icon's out of their price range for most people. Right. And in a big dubbing stage, they would never even consider mixing with the mouse. So it's not
okay, but that's,
a fair comparison.
Yeah, but that's dubbing stages. But I've seen some really great music rooms that, guess what? They're not putting in icons. They're doing mouse mixing and they're doing really unique, innovative ways, but we're going to save that because that's a whole nother podcast. So we're going to take a break right now, unless, Andrew, you wanted to say one thing and I didn't want to cut you off.
I got nothing.
I didn't want to cut you off. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Bobby about his experience being the music director on Masters of Champions. So we will see you on the other side.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before we get into talking with Bobby, I just want to mention a couple things. Number one, Martin is not with us because he was not feeling well today, guys. So we almost had a full panel.
It's going to happen one of these weeks.
We're going to miss Pagey. We miss Pagey. One thing I must mention, I know you normally lead the whole thing, but most important, more important than audio, anything, the World Cup. England's playing.
Let's talk some World Cup.
The World Cup. Now, we're not talking, and I know you're all American, so I'll...
Oh, no. My wife's English.
Hello.
And tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning.
We're going to be kicking some pork and cheese. I'm telling you right now. England plays Portugal tomorrow.
But they don't wear helmets in football.
No, because they're not gay. They're fully strong. They're not like these gay...
Well, they do dive around like gay men.
All the time.
Actually.
No, I'm kidding. World Cup, dudes.
Okay, go England.
He only says that because he's sitting next to me. He knows I'll thump him.
That's right.
So your missus is English?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good. So you've been well... informed.
You know
what? You've been watching the whole cup.
He's been well what?
I don't know.
No.
But whatever it is, I've had plenty of it.
And you've had it well.
Yes.
And you've had it done well.
So we should definitely get you up to the Robin Hood one night, right?
Oh, definitely.
I go to the Robin Hood.
Do you?
Absolutely. We live two blocks from
here. Hey, best fish and chips.
Oh, you do, really?
And now about 1,100 other people will, too.
That's right. Yeah. Best fish and chips ever.
This has been Robin brought to you by Robin Hood Fish and Chips.
And Digi.
And Guinness.
Hey, what the people didn't hear was in the break, the 45-minute continuation of that conversation that we just had.
Well, let's throw out that one tip, though. If you're using Pro Tools, use the dithered mixer.
Yeah, that's great.
Enough said.
A lot of people don't know about it. Makes a big difference.
Two mixers.
Okay,
out there.
Now that you threw it out, don't you explain what the dithered mixer is for people?
It's an alternate mixer that DigiDesign came up with many, many releases ago, but apparently there are quite a few people who don't even know it exists because it's not installed by default. In your plugins folder, there will be two plugins called Stereo Mixer and Surround Mixer. Take them out, and in the unused plugins folder, there is Stereo Dithered Mixer and Surround Dithered Mixer. And what it does is it dithers the signal when it's within the mixer that you build in the mix window as it goes from chip to chip, and it just sounds better. It takes up more DSP, but it sounds better.
Bobby would say it makes it sound almost as good as Nuendo. But no, I agree. It does make a big difference on the Pro Tools mixer, and it any listening tests you're doing, whether you're worrying about summing things in the box or outside on a console, for any kind of listening test, if you're doing real critical listening tests on the summing within Pro Tools, you should use that dithered mixer.
Great. That is a really great tip. And
and that's it for today.
That's about it.
Well, I suppose.
Not run with the nonsense.
Don't run with a fork in your hand. Or,
that was a good... No, that was a really good tip. And that was all part of the 45-minute conversation that we had in between breaks. But before we move on, too, I want to also plug that on the 14th, which is our next podcast. By the way, if you want to come to a podcast, if you want to be part of a podcast, if you want to sit with the panel, you can just email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And we'll hook you up so you can come on down. But on the 14th, we're going to have Todd Campbell from Native Instruments. He's the regional sales manager. And we're going to do a whole Native Instruments show.
That's excellent.
Bobby, why don't you tell everybody what you've been up to? And
yes, now you're going to lose listeners now, definitely.
No, because yeah. I think it's going to be, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, we'll make as much fun of you as you make of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So stick around.
I tell you, the thing is, this you can definitely make fun of because there's not much beaming feature to this, but either way. Where I've been for the last 8 weeks is I have a very good friend who's a composer, and he writes a lot of reality TV music. His name's Dave Vanacore, and he gave me a shout and said, hey, do you want to do the show with me? So I did. And basically, the show is called Master of Champions, and it's currently on ABC right now.
It's getting good ratings, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
No. I hear it's actually doing okay. It's a reality show for people that haven't seen it, and it's just basically, it's from Japan. The idea came from Japan. I won't go into that too much, but basically, it's about people have these weird abilities to do things. Last night's show, for example, was these guys that could ride motorcycles so well that they could literally, from the ground, jump up onto the table and then jump over a cup on a table and not break it, then jump off the table and jump onto a piano and like go up 8 feet. And these guys are just like trippy things. And next week, I can tell you because it's much going to be already on the air. But anyway, next week he's got this guy. He's got these cars, and he's got a skipping rope, and he makes his car skip over the skipping rope. It's like
cars, are skipping ropes.
Yeah, I mean,
That was on one of the commercials. It is on a commercial.
The first show they had these guys at, drift car driving, you know, yeah. And they spin the back wheel and you lose. But what they did was they had this big chunk of cheese in the center of a very small circle, and they got this 350Z. Nissan, great television. Anyway, and they had to go around in this thing and grate the cheese and the one that grated the most cheese wins. So anyway, needless to say, it's a stupid show concept wise. No, it is. I mean, it's a trippy show. It's fun. And my job was to audition to write the music for it and to put a live band together to play whatever music needed to accompany the artist.
You're the music director.
And I had to be the music director. Yeah, exactly.
So you do this every week then?
I did been doing it. It's a summer show, so six season, six show.
Episode.
Six, thank you very much.
So you've done the whole show at this point?
We're waiting, you know, if the ratings are decent, they may call us back to do a couple more. We're not sure, you know what that is.
Sure.
So that was basically it. My job is basically to, one, to audition for the theme, because they wanted the thing, which, by the way, luckily enough, I did, and I got the theme, and I wrote the theme for it.
Oh, so you got the theme?
Yeah, I got the theme.
That's
great. And all, you know, exactly, wrote quite a bit of music for it, and basically it was a lot of fun, and we had to put a band together to play the theme, and they wanted something exciting, reality TV for people that don't really watch it much. It's overly dramatic music in not normal situations. Right. Like the guy's drinking, eating an ice cream, you've got like this orchestra going in the background making it look scary. So it's that kind of thing, over dramatic style of thing. So we wanted Dave, I wanted to make it very drummy oriented, and I worked with Dave before on Survivor Africa, and he liked the stuff, you know, the drums sort of thing. So he said, you know, he called me and said, hey, you know, that the idea we had, maybe put a band together like it. So we did. We had three drummers, which is kind of trippy, really great drummers. One guy played electronic. Cat with Ableton Live and trippy stuff and a chaos and trippy stuff. One guy played traditional drums and one guy played taikos and anything that you could make a noise on.
Yeah, he had like a stomp type of setup.
Stomp setup.
That was cool.
Exactly. You had to wait to see Stomp the night before we put that together.
Inspiration. Thank you.
Well, the other thing I noticed is the one guy, was he the guitar player? Was he a guitar player?
He was.
Who played the
McKay Garnet.
He had a great setup because those little what was he using for the triggers for those little pads?
Oh, you know? He made his own. He's a trippy dude. He's a very talented trippy musician and a trippy dude. He went to Home Depot, I think, and he had these like rubber pipe ends with like tube things, and he stuck them on like, I think maybe sprinkler heads, I'm not quite sure, and he put little piezo triggers in them, and he played drums, and they were
And he used the drum cat to trigger
to
off.
To trigger,
those.
Right.
Oh, that was great.
Very
Because it looked cool.
It looked very cool.
It looked cool, and you have it, and it had a great sound. I mean, everybody played really
Is the band
time.
On camera? Or
Yeah, they are. We are. We should be on next week. You'll see if it's going.
That's right.
What day is it in LA? What day is it coming?
Thursday night, 8 p.m. on ABC.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
it's fun.
Why don't you step us through a little bit on, you picked your band. Did you have a... How does somebody become part of it? Was it auditions? Was
yeah, we ran auditions for 2 days. We went down to Valley's, what the hell's the name? The rehearsal studio right by the Burbank Airport?
Center Stage.
Thank you very
much.
Yeah. She's brain dead here. Anyway, went down there, had a big room in there, set up a whole monitor rig and, had a bunch of drums. And we just, called people that we knew and we didn't know. And it was like kind of like a bit of a cattle call, but it was great. And we had, one thing is it's amazing how lucky we are to work in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Dude,
no shortage of talent.
Scary. These guys would come in and then they were young. They were nice looking people. They were like, they didn't, they were just, and they smoked and like, bam. Like, oh yeah, and that guy was be playing bass. I'm like, oh, that's great. He said, no, I'm the drummer. I'm like, oh, geez. It's true and amazing. So it was a very simple process. The only thing we did was the hardest part was finding chemistry that would work together because they all could certainly play. You just wanted to make sure that you know what it's like in a studio or something and situation. You want to make sure personalities work with each other and it was a working thing.
So the defining factor was after the talent, it was whether just the chemistry. I mean, what made some guys make the cut and others not?
Well, it wasn't because of their playing ability, but I think it was just the way their chemistry worked within the band. For example, unfortunately, a guy called Mobius 8, he's a very sweet guy, John, he's a lovely guy, very talented dude. He has these things called these D-beams. In fact, he invented the D-beam and he licensed it to Roland. And he had like these 15 D-beams and his whole show is like a trippy kind of visual.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's amazing. Yeah. And he was one of the guys we called down. He said, come down, and he came to do an audition. And needless to say, his show is a visual thing.
Oh,
but
it's
because
we're
on the side, we're a side band in a reality.
No, he'd be the whole show.
Yeah, he would be the whole show. And that's exactly what we actually said. We said, look, you're not going to cut it for the band, but you love you dearly because I love him as a person.
We'll give him a plug. John Lario, he's amazing.
John Lario, yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing. Yeah, good friend of the podcast.
Good. Yeah. Oh, he is good. I didn't know. Yeah.
He's
great.
A friend of mine, too.
Is he good?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good man. He's a good lad.
He's a great guy.
And that's why, unfortunately.
I can't picture him being on the side of anything, though. No. His show is so explosive.
I mean, and that was, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. But it was a trippy show, and also a key point is that when Dave and I spoke about it, he said, look, we've got to make this an out band. It mustn't be traditional. They all should be somewhat either trippy looking, somewhat youngish, except for me. And that was it. And that's why we auditioned with these players, different kinds of players, singers. It was great. The singers were the best because won't go there.
Okay, so now you picked your band as a music director. Your job was, did you compose the music and give them charts, or did you give them CDs?
Okay, well, let me put a little truth around the thing, music director. Yes, I was technically, and I am, I was the music director, and that was my job, and that's what I did. But, I'm not a music director, but I've never done music directing. I'll be honest. But Dave was on he had another show going. He's doing The Apprentice. So he said, look, cover this show for me. And he did, and I did. He said, but I want you to be the music director. I said, dude, I'll write the stuff and I'll mix the stuff and I'll get the band rehearsed. And he said, no, I want
that
you
That is music director.
No, what he wanted me to do, and this is what I had to do, was one, learn how to conduct a live band, which is not terribly hard because, a rock and roll band, essentially. It's not terribly hard. Okay, we're in the up, down, it's not that too hard. But to actually watch the live performance, and the way the stage is built is it's a very big stage, and the band was up high and I was kind of at the front of the whole thing looking at the band with a TV monitor, which was the mix, of course, and then watching the live performance and then having to watch what's going on because the artist would do things like, contortionist would do things, and I'd have the guy in my ear saying, when she bends down, I want the music to get scary, and then I want it to go down, and then when we go to Chris, I want it to be soft, and then we want drum roll. So I had to kind of conduct the band up and down in dynamics, which was kind of fun. And that was very challenging for me because that's not what I've ever done. So I'm like, music director? I don't think so. But either way.
You know what? You did a great job, though.
Oh, thank you.
When we came down to the set, you were just... I would have thought this is like your 12th gig instead.
Oh, thank you so much. Jeez, thank you.
You did a really great job.
Well, I can tell you, I'll be honest, I was nervous and on the edge. It's nice. It's nice all stepping out of our comfort range. But
it's nice after doing it for... such a long time and haven't done so many things that there can still be something new.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was trippy. I mean, thank you. You know, the show, I mean, how many times have I mixed a show like that? And tons, and you know, talking to the technicians and talking about inputs, and I mean, it was kind of
Bobby, that was like, this is a podcast, so when you do expressions, nobody can see you.
Okay,
wild <Wow. laughs> hand gesture here. I'll do the
no, he's the Foley guy.
Bobby is waving his hands wildly,
he is scratching his butt now. yeah, so you know, that was a trippy thing. It was a very trippy show, and it was fun to work with live players again. And I know we all remember it fondly, but I really did. It was really nice playing with the guys and going. And I didn't play anything, by the way. I ended up just running a computer system. I can tell you all about that later on if you want. But it was just nice getting like, oh man, that's what we started this gig for. It's just like live players and how easy it is. You know?
Oh, it's so much easier. Jeez. People don't realize that.
It's like, try that a little faster, and at the end, don't play the triple, just do it straight. Okay, ready?
Wait,
go.
I don't have to adjust the master track? Yeah, like, just tell the drummer to play it faster?
Yeah, it was like beautiful. It was trippy.
Okay, so you're the music director. You picked your band. Tell us a little bit about how you composed the music. What did you work on? What did you write on?
I use Nuendo
really?
For sequencing.
Nuendo?
Just to test, yeah. Okay. I do have Pro Tools, I do. It actually is there. When you come in, if the door keeps flapping, I've got to
yeah, it's called a door stop.
Yeah, no. I respect Pro Tools. I dig it big time. But I do like Nuendo because it's a good all-round package, as you know. The sequencing, MIDI sequencing is superior on it, and I use it for that. So, yeah, I wrote the track in the idea of the theme. I put it, flushed it out. I did the vocals. I sang the thing and put it down. And you know, Dave came down, and we flushed it out. He played some parts in, and I had done some stuff, and we just stuck it all together in Nuendo. And that was it. And then we submitted it and crossed our fingers, and that's it.
Did you submit it to the producers? They give the approval, and then once they go yes, then did you give charts to the band, or did you give?
Yes. Well, actually, I'll tell you the approval process, as we all know. Well, we don't actually write the cue, make sure we like it ourselves, because that kind of is, you know, after, you know, live with it for, we didn't have much time, but after, you know, 10 hours, I said, okay, it's good enough, let's go for it, instead of the first four that I throw away. And then send it to the producer, and the producer says, yes, we like it, but, and we'd like to change it. So we change things. Like, there's about a three-day process there, and then they submit it to their client, which is essentially ABC, and then ABC says, yeah, but we want to change this, and then obviously I had to change it all, and, you know, whatever. And then from there, I actually had a CD, literally I had a CD, and with a click track on it in different sections, and I took it down. And at that stage, we didn't really want to go too far with doing charts and stuff, because we didn't really know if it was even going to use the theme. But we, as an audition, we said to the guys, and this was kind of intentional, here's a track, we want you just to play this down, see if you can pick it up, and see how quick the guys did. And obviously they just picked it up in a second, and off they did, you know. So they would hear it four or five times, get the parts down. We told them what key it is, and we didn't even have to, but they just played it down. They're such great players and ears. So it was done, and that was part of it. So no, we never ever had a chart for the actual theme for other parts of music in the show we did, though. And I did that in, the ones I did was in Nuendo, printed out, you know, just simple little bits, because it does.
So once you got, okay, so now we got the music. Tell us a little bit about the actual setup and
your technology.
And what you were using.
It changed what I was supposed to do at the beginning of it and what ended up doing. So initially what I was going to do was run Ableton Live and not run Nuendo, and do the show. It had to be as liquid as possible. That was our job. We didn't know. We literally had to do live scoring to the artists. At least this was our original direction. We had to do live scoring to the artist and be as flexible as a live band could be to the artist, but be given direction by the producer. But in real time and live. So I was like, you know, when a music director could do a really good job, but I can't do this gig. Jeez. But anyway, thank God after the first show, which, by the way, got completely scrapped because of technical reasons and for a bunch of other reasons I can tell you. But either way, we ended up going a much simpler route. But my initial plan was to do Ableton Live. I have, by the way, talking of alternate controllers you spoke of, I've just bought this X-Keys.
X-Keys are great.
Smoking. Yeah. 128. They've got the driver now. That's for it. Yeah. 128 Matrix is smoking. Big old thing. And in Ableton Live, you go bang, bang, bang. You just punch in things and it switches. It's beautiful. Anyway, so I had that all set up ready to go. After 3 days of rehearsing, we found, no, we're not going to do it this way. We're going to play live band and we're going to actually change. So I had to say, okay, put this in a box and let's get out Nuendo. Because I had to also be able to record the band, 16 tracks of the band live. I was going to record the band because we have to post it. They maybe want to change the balance or whatever. So they wanted as much flexibility as possible. I also had to play MIDI tracks back. I also had to record MIDI performance from the players that were playing MIDI instruments, as well as play a two-track mix to the live guy for the live audience. And so, of course,
is that all?
I'm going, oh, I can do this easily. This is no problem. Hey, Nuendo is brilliant. And I'll tell you something about Nuendo, which I emailed him and told him what a pile of crap it was because it failed miserably. And I'll be honest, I'll tell you, it failed miserably in a couple of respects. But for the most part, it did a good job. But it did fail miserably in a couple of spots. But initially, what I wanted to do, 7 players, I had to do charts on the fly. And we had to do arrangement changes. So what I may have to do is to cut up the arrangement according to what the producer is telling me or director is telling me in my ear to what the show is going to be, and let the band see what the arrangement is immediately so they could play along with it, because we had to have a lot of stuff on tape. So what I ended up planning was to have a flat panel monitor for each person and have the score open. I'd have 2 monitors, and my left monitor would be the score only, and I'd have a duplicate that would be a split send to all the players. So they would all have real-time score and even have a chart thing go past, and then it would be a moving little bar, you know, and Nuendo works. It's got like a little bouncing ball kind of line sort of thing. So they could see, I could say, okay, bar 7, here we go, ready? See, I've chopped out, you know, I had a talkback mic, by the way, at a 58, I could talk to everybody who had earwigs. So I could say, okay, I've chopped out bar 7, we're going to go from 7, we're going to go straight to 9, okay, ready?
Oh, that's cool.
So that's how we were going to do it. That was the big plan. But,
you know, that sounds great.
The concept was great, everything, except one, of course, the budget got in the way, because they said, forget it, we're not renting 7 flat panel 32-inch monitors, so that, you know, because we needed real estate. And two, the stage was, we had 3 drummers, a keyboard, 2 keyboard players, a guitar player, electric, you know, myself, a lead singer, 7 players on stage. This initial stage they built was 8 foot by 6 foot. Oh, and we had to have the monitor mixer up there too. I was like, no, may not work.
8 foot by 6 foot.
It's true. That was that's a funny story in itself. Initially, you know, I suppose with the music director, but I just happened to be got sent the tech list for the band. And it got sent to everybody, and I was on, and I saw the list, and it said monitor mixer 02R, and I'm like, no, hang on, stop. And thanks to you, actually, I called Larry to try and organize a Paragon. I said, dude, we're not doing it with, forget about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you need a real monitor.
We need a real console. I'm not doing that. And it's a great console. 02R is excellent consoles, but not for mixing.
Not for that.
Not for that. You know. So anyway, so the budget got sent out the window because they didn't realize that it was, you know, needed 56 inputs for that.
Okay, so now let's talk about what the reality was.
Yeah, so the reality was we got a D5, we went digital, the monitor mixer sat on the floor 25 feet below us, as you saw, the stage got enlarged to 16 feet some odd, and we all fitted on there, but, you know, the flat panel monitors flew out the window because, one, we weren't going to do that much to playback because of bleed and whatever, and the wanting to change everything musically, style-wise, after the show in post, they said, no, we can't have the live band bleeding all over all the audience mics. There was 100, you know, bunch of mics open all over the place, all over the stage. So we said, okay, well, then we won't play live, except for the themes and the
the bumpers in
the
and
bumps
out.
And
so what were the acts hearing?
So, yeah, here's a trippy thing. You know, a lot of the acts were choreographed acts, but they weren't sure that the music that they were playing to, one had been cleared, see if there were guys dancing to Michael Jackson. They couldn't get clearance to it. And he's rehearsed to it. So what we had to do, Dave and his crew and myself, had to write the music for the artists before, so they could rehearse their show to it and learn it for the next day. It was just a scary deadline. So that's one of the reasons why you didn't see me. I swear, we had no sleep. I ended up staying in a hotel because I couldn't afford to drive back home. And I live in Sherman Oaks, and, you know, the studio was in Hollywood. I couldn't afford that time in the car at 9 a.m. downbeat. I was like, forget it.
So you were writing music for every act, every, in the style that they're used to,
right?
So that they could record. Wait, so that they could rehearse
and record it.
And they can
but so ABC didn't have to go and license all this expensive stuff.
No wonder we didn't see it.
But that's in the meantime. But there was a show as well, and we had to rehearse the show for the show that we had the music already done for time. So it was scary. Wow.
What was your day? You wake up at
18 hours. I did. I swear, and I'm 45 years old now. I used to be able to do it much better, but I did about 3 18-hour. No, I did 4 18-hour days in a row, and I was not nice. I was just not friendly at all. I was like, ratty and pissed off. I couldn't handle it. I was tired. And I started forgetting things. I was like, man, what? I started going, it's trippy. So, yeah, it was a silly, silly schedule. And everybody that worked on that project said that, and they will work on other projects, obviously, they said they've never seen such a short deadline. It was a trippy deadline.
That's amazing.
And it is amazing. And, I mean, that in itself is like Master of Champions. That's worthy of it. The way that show got put together so quickly because, you know, unfortunately, it's not the best show in the world, I'll be honest, because of many things. But the amount of time it got put together, it's very good.
Well,
it's trippy.
We went, what show number? We were like next to the last show when we went into...
I think you were four, actually. You were four.
And it looked great. I mean, you guys looked like you had your act together and
how
it all went smooth.
How many days did you take to do one show, was it?
It was one day rehearsal of it and one day printing of it.
Wow.
But, you know, it was... hard part of the show was not so much us playing the parts because that was fine. Once we knew what music they wanted. I mean, some of the funny stories are hilarious, but... was that the acts themselves didn't always get it right. I mean, you know, it was hard sometimes for the dudes to like skid the car around perfectly every time for camera after camera, and then the cheese would grate and fall on the ground and he would lose traction and slide into the thing and then bash his window and he'd like have to fix it. And it was like trippy. The dudes with the helicopters, actually one of the shows that got completely canned, one of his things and his main trick was to fly this helicopter and make toast with it. He just couldn't do it. Dude, we were there for hours. We were there. We're like, okay, here we go. Ready? that was another thing. I had all these cues. They said 1 minute 30 seconds for the show acts, right? That was the duration of music ideally they wanted in when it was going to air. So we said, okay. So we wrote the music in their style for 1 minute 30, you know, with the right thing. And the band had it. And they all had their charts and we're like, oh yeah, we know this, we've got this down, ready, go. And the act starts going and I'm going away and we're all like playing away and like I'm seeing the end of my audio coming. I'm going, we're gonna stop soon. This guy hasn't even taken off. I'm like, oh shit. So I'm like, okay, dude, it's scary.
Yes.
Really scary.
So I ended up doing everything like maybe like 5 minutes just in case it ran long, and then if the guy did get it right, it was like, okay, well I have to have a left right locator and go to the end, you know.
And some of the acts just never accomplished their act.
A lot of them did. Wow. And not a lot, five of them did.
So, you know, my next question that I was going to ask you was what was the hardest thing about the gig? but it was all hard.
You know, it was a lot of fun. It wasn't really hard. Once we got going and I got my sea legs as being the so-called music director, it was fine. It was really fine. And as Dave said, and Dave was excellent. You know, Dave Vanacore, he's a very talented, sweet dude, a buddy of mine. But he said, dude, you're going to do this. You can do this. You know you can do this. And I said, okay. And I you know, and he said, no, you can do it. And
so will you do it again?
Can strike that too. Oh, God. You know, it was challenging. The hardest part about it was... the hardest part about it was standing around waiting for them to get Oh, man, it was hard.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of waiting.
It was hurry up and wait. I mean, that's what it is. That's TV, but that's what it is. And that's like,
well, there's that in normal TV, and then when you have a talent competition with all these insane kind of acts.
So were you guys just like entertaining people? Like,
oh, yeah, that's the other thing. Oh, yeah. That's a very good point. They have a warm-up guy that comes out. Very talented people these guys are, right? They'd come out, blast with one of the guys, and he'd come out, and he's cheering the audience, got a live audience to keep them warm. And they're like, band, play me something. So it's like,
man.
Okay, well, we all play the theme. I don't think you like this. So obviously, you know, the guys were so good. They just play like Brick House and all the classics, right. The dance stuff. So everybody would sing along, or there'd be rappers, and it was fun. So
all of a sudden, it's a bar mitzvah.
Exactly right.
So... did you have to do any post-recording after it was
I
all
did.
Done?
Actually, good question. On show six, once we had our act together, basically, I had all these tempos and I had a list of stuff that we needed to record with the band because my theme was all MIDI. I did all, you know, we did it all at my place. I did play a little bit on it, but nothing really. It wasn't the band. And so what I did was I had exactly what we needed for the show posting, and I got we laid it out for the band to play. So one dinner break when everybody off went to dinner, the engineers stayed in place and the band stayed in place. We literally went down in half an hour and we recorded everything for the show. And that went to... separate DA98 tapes, and then I took them back to my place and loaded into the window, and that was it.
And did you do the mix for the music? Did you do the?
I did the mix for the theme. Yeah, the music I wrote. Yeah, you know, obviously it's like it's the monitor mix. Like finish writing, done, mixed. It's mixing. No, yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Wow. What was the what would you say was like the most pleasant surprise about the gig, you know?
The players. And you know something? I should give kudos to those guys. They're all excellently
Why
talented.
Why don't you name the guys?
Oh, okay. Ollie Marlin, smoking keyboard player, singer, talented man. He plays with everybody. Dan Lutz, who is a smoking singer and bass player and musician. Great, upright, electric, everything. Vic Vanacore, actually Dave Vanacore's brother's son, who's an amazing percussion player and drummer. Ian Grom, the drummer. McKay, Agana, who's an electronic drummer and a guitar player. And Bernadette Barlow, who was the singer. Also very nice. It was great.
It was a great band.
And they were a great, funky band.
And the band looked great, too. With those three, the three drummers, that was really
cool.
It
is impressive. You know, that's one thing we don't, and I know this is kind of sidebar, but we always get stuck in talking about digital and analog. We forget, I certainly did, how cool it is when three drummers play the same figure on different drums. Like, hey, just play, bam, 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 bam,
oh, it's the
bam.
Coolest.
It's like, yeah. Woo, that is so big. You can sit there and go, okay, you double it, okay, hit it again. It's just, forget about it. You know, it's like trying to double a trumpet with the same pair of lips. It just doesn't work. It's like, whatever. It's just, there's something happens, and that's it. That's magic.
You know, the one thing is, when I went to see on the set, I just kind of got off on the whole vibe of the whole live show, with not just the live band, but there was something about the audience and the hosts and the whole. It just, because you know, I've been over to your studio and seeing you in your studio, you know, that's a certain environment. But when
not
you get
much
around,
audience there, right?
Yeah. But when you get around those people, and it was really great to see you interact with the audience and stuff.
Introducing just, everybody, right?
Yeah, I just, you know, to me that would have been, especially at the studios that you filmed at, you know, where they. Hollywood Center Studio, is that what it was?
Hollywood Center Studios, right, stage 4.
Yeah.
It was good. I loved live. That's where we started. I was a DJ for years and years and years, and it was such fun, you know, just.
I can tell because you definitely took to the whole interaction, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
So then we'll just figure out if you're going to do it again, if that ever happens.
Yeah. Hey, you know, who knows?
All right, well, it's good to have you back, Bobby.
It's nice to be back. I missed you guys. I did.
We miss your job.
Yeah.
And thank you for telling us a little bit about the behind the scenes over at the Masters of Champions. And, you know, it's doing well, and I hope it does well for you and for everybody else. And Andrew?
I'm just stuck on the helicopter and the toast thing.
Yeah, I swear.
Explain this. So he never actually made it, but how was you it asked supposed to work?
Okay, check this out. I mean, there's these two people. The concept of this show is they compete against each other in similar fields. Like, for example, a guy...
So there's someone similar to the toast with the helicopter.
Yeah, so But yeah, okay, in this instance, for example, and unfortunately the show got canned because for technical reasons, anyway... as well. But there was these two people competing against each other to be the Master of Champions.
Hopefully this is outside?
No, inside.
No, it's inside in the stage.
The stage was so big they drove cars around.
Inside.
How big are the helicopters?
Just
oh, no,
RC.
They're radio controlled. RCs, yeah.
Oh,
sorry, RCs. Yeah,
oh, that would be a show.
Oh, I thought it
would be a show.
That would have been a bit tough.
It's not a Twilight Zone.
No.
I'm sitting there going, okay, there's two helicopters inside the
small helicopter.
Okay. Little wireless.
So back to the toast.
Okay. Here's the thing. So they got two champion RC helicopter flyers, pilots, and they said, okay, we want you to compete against each other, and you've got to do your most fantastic trick. So one would say, well, I'm going to do this, and the other guy said, you're going to do this. So one guy said, he's going to make breakfast, and that was his thing, and they're like, what? And he said, no, I'll make breakfast. But he did. He does do it, but this show he didn't make. But the trippy thing was, you know,
helicopter. How do you make breakfast with a helicopter?
Well, they have a spatula stuck to the front of the bloody helicopter. I swear, he's got two helicopters. One takes off a certain thing and he goes down and he scoops up the eggs and whatever it is and he goes and he flips it over and it drops in the frying pan and the thing's hot, obviously, and it's frying. And that starts going and then he goes off and gets toast. And there's a toaster, and he goes down on the helicopter, knocks the toaster on so it starts to glow red, and he goes back and gets a piece of bread, and he flies over this helicopter, I mean, with his helicopter, over the toaster. But needless to say, a helicopter doesn't hover like that. And the toast is like, you know, so the spatula is at the end of the thing, and the toast groove is there where you're going to put it in. It just doesn't work, the physics, the law of it. So he had to kind of do this and fly over, then drop it. Like bombing, but like bombing into that crack. Dude, talk about the 1 minute 30 piece of music to cover that? No.
How long did he try for?
I don't want to Maybe an hour.
Okay. Now the question is,
trippy.
After the like the 60th take, what are you hearing in your headphones?
Well,
I mean, oh, that must be. I mean,
dude, that's it was hilarious. It was. I mean, it was hilarious what happened in the headphones. The headphones were. Actually, this is actually funny. You know, headphones. We had earwigs for our monitors. Right. We didn't have, so we had earwigs, and then I had at some time had the producer can pack on there, and you have two channels. You can either talk to somebody or they can talk to you. But sometimes there's an open, so the stage manager talks to everybody. But it just so happens that you guys are counting to them and say, "Okay, ready, four bars. Okay, ready. Okay, we come down. Ready, in 3, 2, 1." Well, it's gonna look. I'd be like, it was a nightmare. That was the hardest part. Actually, that was the hardest part. Listening to three things at once.
Wow.
It was trippy. But I'll tell you something, for what it's worth, if you guys watch the show, I think it's next week, one of them, this dude, okay, you're not going to believe this, playing cards, right? He can throw a playing card. You wouldn't believe it. Let me say, you've got to watch the show, but he makes a smoothie with the playing card.
Oh yeah, they talked about that. There's a promo for that too.
Oh, they did.
I mean, they don't tell you the outcome. But.
You can't believe it. He throws a playing card the length of a football field, and you open the pack. It's not a fixed thing, guys. So here's a pack. He said, "Okay, fine." He goes, "He used to be a baseball player." The dude is scary. He chopped bananas and carrots in half with a baseball bat with the playing card.
Wow,
amazing. Yeah.
Well, Andrew, did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think I'm good. It's like Alan's psychedelic breakfast. Right. You know? 40 years later.
So, next week we'll do cooking with helicopters.
That's right. So,
it's trippy.
Welcome to your first podcast.
Is this your first one? I thought you've been here before.
No, as a panel member.
Oh, that's
he was a guest.
Oh,
it's different.
No doubt.
Yes.
I get to keep my pants on.
And I've actually got to say, I'm very pleased. And I have to say, I would say it very respectfully, I'm very pleased to have another analog friend in the room.
Aww. Aww. You have analog friends.
No, come on, what do you mean, analog friends? You, Mr. Pro Tools, or what are you?
Pro Tools with analog.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
No, he just makes his record on the knee. He's my bud. Now.
All right, well, we're going to give a shout-out to Martin, who can't be with us.
And
you know, hopefully next week he'll be back with us. But... all right, guys. Well, that's the end of this podcast, and I appreciate
it. Dinner?
Let's go. Let's go to Jerry's.
Right. And go England.
And go England.
And go England.
2-0.
All right. This is Mike.
All right.
Do
I don't believe it for a second. I hope so.
I need a warning. Yeah, Brazil. Well, wow. Brazil.
All right. Well, let me just say goodbye. So why don't we all say goodbye until next week? Goodbye.
Bye. Until next week.
Bye.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.